Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern, and the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan, and so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time To Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. I was really excited to talk to Frederick Bachman about his book, Anxious People, which just came out in paperback. Frederick is the number one New York Times bestselling author of A Man Called Ove, My Grandmother Asked Me to Tell You She's Sorry, Brit Marie Was Here, Bear Town, Us Against You, and now Anxious People, as well as two novellas and one work of nonfiction. His books are published in more than 40 countries. He lives in Stockholm, Sweden, with his wife and two children. Welcome, Frederick. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Anxious People, your number one New York Times bestseller, now out in paperback.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So when I heard about Anxious People and that it was about sort of a hostage situation and the bank and da-da-da, I felt like that was not representative of actually what it's about. It's about some like seriously deep issues of, you know, society and money and suicide and family and all sorts of other things. So I feel like the hostage was like a ploy to almost, not a ploy, but a means of a vehicle to get to the real story. Did you feel like that, or did I just make that up?
No, but I think all cultures like that in different ways. I think there are very few things that would, I mean, all the things that you like, all the things that you really get excited about when you try to tell someone about them, it's very rarely that, oh, it's about Oh, it's about exactly the thing that it said on the back. It's about, I mean, the elevator pitch is very rarely what draws you into something. I mean, the most of the things that you get excited about are usually, yeah, it's about this, but it's really about this and this and this and this. And you know, the great, and people grasp on to different things, different parts of a story. And I'd written three, if you want to divide my writing very categorically, I wrote three comedic novels to begin with. And then I wrote Beartown and Us Against You, which are more dramatic in its setting. And with Beartown and Us Against You, I wrote from a lot of different people's perspective, which I hadn't. I had only written comedies with one camera, so to speak. So this Anxious People was the first time that I employed what I learned from Beartown and Us Against You, the way of writing from a lot of different people's perspective. But I employed that in a comedic setting. I hadn't done that before. But as soon as you do that, the story starts taking a lot of different directions. There's a lot of different things going on, because it has to be, because if you're writing about seven people, they can't all be experiencing the same story. There has to be. So I think that's part of where it came from. And then I just tried to hold it all together in the end. But it's also, I mean, part of that is also a trick. Part of that is also because you use smokes and mirrors when you write. I have to, especially in this case where I tried to write a locked room mystery, and I try to distract you a little bit, I need smokes and mirrors. I need, oh, there's something emotional going on over here, or there's something funny going on over here, and I'm using that so that you don't pay attention to where I'm placing the clues of the mystery. There's a little bit of everything.
Well, you did that very successfully, because I was totally surprised as things unfolded throughout the book. And I just loved how, I mean, I just did not see any of it coming, particularly. Like, it just, anyway, well done. You know, not that you need my praise. I know you've had heaps of it, but I just thought it was absolutely brilliant the way it all became clear at the end what was going on the whole time. It was just brilliant. I just thought it was awesome. I really loved the way you talk about parenting and the sort of stress that comes along with being a parent. I have four kids of my own, and I'm very familiar with that particular brand of stress. And you had one passage towards the beginning that I was just hoping to read about parenting. You wrote, "The man looked at him calmly, almost sympathetically, and replied, 'Do you know what the worst thing about being a parent is? That you're always judged by your worst moments. You can do a million things right, but if you do one single thing wrong, you're forever that parent who was checking his phone in the park when your child was hit in the head by a swing. We don't take our eyes off them for days at a time, but then you read just one text message and it's as if all your best moments never happen. No one goes to see a psychologist to talk about all the times they weren't hit in the head by a swing as a child. Parents are defined by their mistakes.'" So tell me a little bit about that, and if this is coming from a personal place or not.
No, but it's coming from a general place. It's, I mean, I think you could apply that to being a grown up as well. That's a big part of of growing up and becoming an adult. But in particular, as you become a parent, you start analyzing yourself and your place in the world more, because a lot of the things that you assume about yourself and a lot of the things that are important to you, all of a sudden they come into question, because, well, this is really important to me, but it doesn't, like, this particular principle of mine does not work when I have to be with my kids. Like, this can be however important I want it to be. It doesn't matter when I have kids. And all of a sudden you have to, like, sort in between your principles and decide, what are the principles that are most important to me? And one of the things that you learn fairly quickly is that well, you're going to be judged by your mistakes. You're not going to be, because you also learn very quickly that you have this, well, how was your day? You were with your kids. Like, how was your day? Well, the kids are going to, you know, if you pick up your kids from school and you ask, like, how was your day? They very rarely say, "Oh, you know what? For 7 hours and 38 minutes, it was awesome, Dad. It was awesome." Like, they're going to start with, "When, well, you know, this one other kid was mean," or this one kid threw sand, or the teacher was unfair, or, you know, that they're going to go straight to what's bothering them. If you ask for a review of yourself as a parent, they're going to go straight to, like, these are your flaws. And that's just a thing that you, I think that I wasn't as prepared for it. And I wasn't as prepared for the thing that, well, you get zero credit as a parent. Like all of the things that you, like, it's assumed that you're supposed to be a great parent. It's assumed. Like, well, I gave my kids, you know, home cooked food every day this week. Well, it's assumed you're supposed to. And I felt that was something I could use, like this everyday anxiety. It's also the fact that if you want to talk about like the dramatical points of writing a novel, it's a pretty common statement about writing a novel that something has to be gambled, like something, there has to be stakes. Someone has to be on the verge of losing something to make this interesting, or, you know, to make us root for them. And you call that stakes, right? Like, in, yes. Yeah. I think that was what I could use here to make that obvious, that as soon as your kids are involved, you know, you're prepared to do a lot of pretty stupid things. A lot, as soon as your kids are involved, you know, your everything changes. Your whole perspective of, like, what would I be prepared to do to support myself? Well, that's a whole different question from what would I be prepared to do to support my kids? What length would I go to keep my kids safe? Or so I kind of use those basic emotions of never being good enough and put that into a dramatical setting where, all right, this could be the reason why people got put in this situation to begin with.
So interesting and so true. It is the most thankless job, you know, known to man, but yes.
But it is, because your kids always have that, they have that perfect argument to whenever you're upset with them. Then why did you have kids? You didn't have to get kids. It's not a law that you have to get. No one forced you to have kids. You had a kid. Now, you know, this is your, I'm your problem now. You figure it out. And that's such a perfect argument, especially if, you know, especially if they can say, well, I'm your DNA. So if I'm, you know, if I annoy you, that's on you.
My kids don't say that to me, but they should. Yeah, your kids are a little more manipulative or brighter or, you know, smarter or something. I don't know. I can't even, you know, they don't need any more ammunition. But back to the book, which is so fantastic. You know, one of the themes is anxiety, mental illness, what you do with your feelings, how you cope with them. There's the therapist character, there's and how she became a therapist and why. And then there's somebody in therapy, and then there's people contemplating suicide and jumping and, you know, the effects of the trauma of that and all sorts of, I mean, this is like a, it's like different rooms, therapy rooms almost, you know, it could be a comic sort of with the strips of it, how many strands there are rather. And in particular, the suicide element, which I know you touch on also in your acknowledgments and giving resources and everything at the very end. Can you talk about your own experience? I lost a friend to suicide also, and it looks like from what you wrote, you did as well, but I don't know if you're comfortable talking about it or if that was sort of the genesis for the plot points or not.
No, but it's. I think I touched on the subject of suicide in almost all of my novels, I think. I'm not sure, but I think in almost all of them. No, I had a friend who ended his life when I was around 20 years old. And I think I've touched on it in different ways all through my career, but as a writer. But I think it's in this particular novel, I wanted to write something about it, about the fact that with the ripple effects, with the fact that it affects people in ways you couldn't imagine if someone ends their life. It's because you never get over it. It's impossible to get past. I mean, it's 20 years ago that my friend ended his life, and I'm not over it. I'm not close to being over it. It doesn't, you know, there's no, you know, time heals all wounds. There's none of that. It doesn't. It doesn't become logical or clear or fair, or you don't get over it. You can't get past it. And it affects you in ways that are almost incomprehensible if you haven't experienced it yourself. But in that way that everyone I meet who has someone close to them who has ended their life, I think can understand what I mean when I say, well, after that, you never hear a phone ringing at an odd hour without thinking the absolute worst. It's just the first, you know, as soon as the phone rings at like 9 o'clock at night, you assume the very, very worst. And if it rings at 1 a.m., then you're on your feet running through a list of everyone you love. It's just, and that never leaves, that never ends, that never, you still have those moments where you just assume the very worst. If someone calls you and says, oh, I have some bad news, you immediately go to that, you know, the very, very, very worst imaginable place. And of course, you can be that sort of person without having lost someone. But if you have lost someone, you're kind of forced into that personality and it never ends. You're never going to be past it. You're never going to get over it. And that's probably the thing that I wanted to touch on in this particular novel, that there are people here and there are ripple effects, but they never, something happened to a couple of these people and they could never get past it. They could never get over it. It still holds them back. And I wanted to, you know, touch on that and the anxiety part. And then there's a comedy, which is, you know, if this is the way you'd pitch it, people would not assume, oh, this sounds fun. But it's that's how I use comedy. I use comedy to be able to talk about the very serious matters, because without the comedic settings, it would almost be unbearable. I think, you know, I use the comedic setting to put us in a place where we can have this discussion without it ending us.
I feel like they call that gallows humor, right? How in the depths of despair, you have to joke. Sometimes it's the only way to get through. And it's almost like that's on a broader application of it, if you will.
Well, it's a defense mechanism more than anything. To me, it is.
Yeah. Yes. For sure. And what about writing for you itself? Has that helped you sort of through some of these? I know you said you can't get over it, which sounds sort of, you know, depressing and discouraging for people who are trying to get through anything, because all you can really do is go one day at a time, right? It's just today until tomorrow in this endless stream of days. So, you know, does writing help you sort of cope with all of that yourself?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it. And that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
No, but I think you get through it. You just don't get past it.
That's right.
It gets easier. You develop coping mechanisms. It's just the fact that 20 years down the line, it's still incomprehensible. It still makes absolutely no sense. And you still, you know, no matter how much time passes, that sounds so stupid and so, I mean, it sounds almost shallow, I guess, that when it happens to someone is going through that experience, someone close to them ended their life. And they start saying things like, oh, if I only had, or if I had known, or if all the day before I should have, or all that morning I was gonna, but I didn't. And as soon as people start that, the only thing that you can tell them is you can't do that to yourself. You cannot go down that road. And I'm only saying that because that road never ends. In 20 years, you'll be asking yourself the exact same questions. And nothing will have changed. So there's no coming to terms with it. There's no answers down the line. And that might be a strange subject to bring into something that I wrote as a comedy, but it's the only setting where I could include it. It's the only setting where I'd say, well, I can touch on this in a comedic setting because it's bearable there. But I have a very, very hard time touching on that subject in a dramatic setting because it just gets too heavy. It's just unbearable.
Yes.
But I also wanted, you know, for the purpose of the novel, I wanted to touch on the fact that it has ripple effects. Like people affect each other in ways you're not aware of and in ways that you're not expecting. And in a comedic setting, I find that helpful because it's incredibly annoying to people. It's incredibly annoying to people that you're affected by others, that you're not this pure little mechanism in the world where you make choices and you know, we're not masters of our own fate. I mean, it's a good motivational speech before sports, you know, before the big game. It's a great motivational speech, but we are not masters of our own fate. We're not. We're affected by what other people are doing all of the time. And that annoys us. And part of the comedic setting for this book was that, to begin with, the people who are in the hostage situation are people who are very, very bad at handling the fact that other people sometimes control their fates. So they're already, to begin with, they're annoyed and emotionally violated by the fact that someone is here with a gun and now I can't leave. I can't go about my day because you decided to take me hostage. And that annoys me. That annoys me because I'm a person who, I don't want to stand in line. I don't want to wait. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be in traffic. I don't want other people to have this effect on me. So that's sort of where the comedic structure came from. Like these kind of people who would get annoyed if you're in a traffic jam because someone was in an accident. some people get immediately annoyed that, why would you get into an accident when I'm in a hurry? Like, why can't you just, you know, there's no empathy there. There's no, like, oh my God, someone was in an accident. It's like, you ruined my day. You know, you drove your car off the road and now I have to wait because of the thing. That's the comedic structure. And then I try to, you know, weave that into the thing with someone ends their life. That doesn't end it. I mean, that doesn't, your life continues in all of the people around you, even people you didn't know are affected by this now, because this decision has so many ripple effects. So that's usually my structure, that I'll try to find one comedic structure that I can build into a dramatic structure and try to, you know, make you laugh and then make you say, yeah, but I you know, I get where you're going with this.
Wow. Well, well done on that front. I will never sit in traffic the same way. I know it's so all these shorthands of life, right? It all becomes about time and whose time is important and how to maximize time. And sometimes in haste, people forget what's actually important in life, which is other people and connections and all of that. Anyway. Are you working on anything new now?
Yeah, I'm finishing. I wrote Beartown and Us Against You, and I'm finishing the third part of that now. So the third part of that trilogy, I think it's going to be called The Winners in the US. So I'm finishing it now. So it's going to be out in Sweden in October. So I'm guessing next year for the US. That's about where I am.
And do you have any advice for aspiring authors?
Yeah, well, it depends on... depends on the subject. Any advice or something in particular? Or
any advice?
Well, there's a couple of things that I tend to go back to. I think, you know, first of all, finish something. That's my first advice, because a lot of people get in touch with me and they say, I have this great idea for a novel. What should I do? Or you should write the novel. Or I've written a great outline for a novel. Like, should I contact a publisher? No, you should write the novel. Yeah, but what about, you know, finish the story. Finish the story and I will talk. Yeah, but how do you go about getting a publisher? And, you know, do I need to get an agent? And you need to finish the story, because it's impossible for me to read something that doesn't exist. Put it down on paper and, you know, then turn to the other problems. But, you know, finish it. And also, whatever you're writing, finish something. And that sounds, you know, like a bit of a bland advice. But it's, instead of trying to write this huge original novel that is going to change the way we look at the publishing industry, try to write a novella. Like, try to get like one story, 10 pages. Just get that down on paper and finish it, so that you can give it to someone and say, here's something I wrote. Would you read it? Tell me what you think. As soon as you finish a story, you get that sense of achievement. You get that sense of, hey, I finished it. I had this idea. I wrote it from start to finish and I finished it. And even if it's just 10 pages, you have that, oh, I'm putting this aside now. I'm starting my second project now. And that does something to you, but you also learn so much from having a finished project, because as soon as you finish it, you can go back to the beginning and say, wow, I learned something from this writing process. And if I started over now, I would have written this another way. I would have started I know you get all these ideas, and then, you know, once in a while, something that starts with 10 pages, all of a sudden you realize, like, I think I could build this into a novel. But I think a lot of really, really good novels has a basic idea that you could write down in 10 pages. And then all of the rest of it, that's the world expanding. So try to have an idea that's possible to finish. Like, try to get your ideas simple as possible. So that's one thing. Another thing is, I'm not going to give this advice and say this is how you should do it. I can only say that for me, it helped a lot when I realized that I wasn't original, that I wasn't special. That was the turning point in my career. And that sounds really stupid, but it really was, because when I figured out, because up to a certain point in your life, you want to be original. You want to be special. You want to be Harry Potter up to a certain age. You're dreaming about the fact that one day I'm going to get a letter and it's going to say I'm chosen, and everything is going to be, everything up to that point is going to be, oh, this is where my adventure begins because I'm a genius and no one knew. It's, you know, you might be a genius. You might be, but most of us aren't. And when I figured out in my late 20s that I'm not really special, I'm not really original, I'm probably never going to write a novel where everyone says like, wow, this is such an original setting, or such an original story. Most of the things that I do are fairly conventional. They're conventional in the way I build them. There's a very classical, dramatical curve to everything I do. But you can fill it with something. You can fill it with something that's uninteresting, or you can fill it with emotions and something that makes people care. Most of the great songs that I like, they're three or four chords. But you can play three or four chords. You can play them great if you put everything into it. But not everything has to be complicated. Not everything has to be original or like mind-blowing. And when I figured that out was when I figured out the things that I like, a lot of other people like too. Like it's very rare for me to, wow, I saw this TV show and I loved it. And then I go on like IMDb and, oh, it's got 3.7. That very rarely happens. Most of the things that I like, I go on the internet and say, oh, it's got an 8.2. Because guess what? 6 million other people loved it too. It's most of the books that I love, I go online and say, yeah, you love it because it's a classic. Or you love it. you know what? It's the number one bestseller all over the world because everyone else loves it too. I have the same kind of taste as a lot of other people do. And when I figured that out, that, well, it's very rare for me to say like, oh, I love this obscure thing that no one has ever heard of. When I figured that out, it was, well, that's good because that means I can trust my instincts. That means when I write, I never have to think, I think this is what people want. I think this is what the audience crave. I don't have to think that. The only thing I have to do is think, do I like this? Is this the emotional starting point that I want to be from? And is this doing something to me? And that was the whole turning point in my career when I figured that out, that I can trust my instincts. Because if I like this, there's probably going to be other people who likes it too.
That's so funny you say that, because I feel like I feel the same way. I was talking to a girlfriend of mine this morning about your book and how great it is. And then I was like, but you know, it's not like I'm discovering something, like it's the number one bestseller. Like I feel like ridiculous that I'm like, I loved this book, you know, like my taste matters. But it's true. I feel like sometimes I even feel with emotions too. And I don't mean to ramble, but you know, if I have an emotion, like if I'm really sad about something or I'm really nervous or worried in a given moment, that just means that there are so many other people out there having the same feeling that I'm having. So if I write it down, I know that if I express it, somebody else is feeling it and they'll feel better because they'll know that I felt it. So anyway, I don't write fiction, but I feel the same way about sort of that emotional authenticity in a way.
Yeah, but that's the starting point. And then, you know, I can say that and sound clever. I don't live by it. It's not, I mean, my wife has to tell me on a daily basis, when I get annoyed with someone, and not on a daily basis, because she doesn't have the energy to tell me on a daily basis. Most of the time, she just ignores me. But once in a while, she'll turn to me and she'll say, you know what? Maybe they were going through some stuff. You know what, Frederick? Maybe you're not the only one having a bad day here. You know, maybe they're having a bit of a day too.
Yep.
So, you know, maybe cut them some slack. Yes. You know, maybe that job isn't all that fun, Frederick. So maybe you take a breath because you make stuff up for a living. So maybe, you know, maybe have some patience for someone who is actually doing a job. We have that discussion a lot. And it's easy to say, but it's hard to live by. But that comes back to the fact that in the novel Actions People, that's the thing I keep returning to, that it's so incredibly annoying that other people affect you so much, that you're dependent on other people, especially that you're dependent on strangers. Like, strangers can make or break your day. That's an incredibly annoying fact.
It's true. It's so true. Well, Frederick, thank you. This has been so interesting. And I was so excited to talk to you. I loved your book. I'm a huge fan. I love the way you just think about the world. It's really awesome. So thank you for chatting with me today. I hope your back feels better.
That's why I'm starting to move around.
Okay. Well, you made it this far.
Well, thank you. I hope you got a little bit of what you were hoping for.
I definitely did. I just wanted to get to know you better. And I mean, I hope that you feel that you shared enough that this is the real you.
No, but thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.